Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday's podcast. Thank you for downloading today's episode on October 21st. Coming up today, reaction from County Hall following the suspension of four Reform UK councillors. Domestic abuse survivors set up their own support service and a new reservoir takes a step forward. But first, taking a look at our top story today. A Hawkinge man has been sent to prison after he stabbed another man with a broken bottle. A court heard Stephen Harwood-Brown was in a terrible emotional state when he lashed out at the victim at Picklebacks in Folkestone in August. Reporter James Pallant has been following this story for the podcast. He's with me now to answer some questions. First of all, James, can you tell us about what happened the night of the attack?
Staff at the former Picklebacks bar in Folkestone were closing up when the attack occurred around 4 a.m. on August 18th last year. Canterbury Crown Court heard that the bar's owner, Stephen Harwood-Brown, 32, had been drinking heavily before he observed a member of staff, Mirkan Karatas, flirting with his then-partner, Holly Hester, who was also working behind the bar. CCTV footage played during the hearing on Friday showed Harwood-Brown throwing Mr. Karatas to the ground, kicking him and striking him with a bottle. It's at this point that the victim in the case, Mr. Karatas's friend, Hossein Hadabashlu, arrives at the Cheriton Place boozer and proceeded to break up the fight. But the court heard Harwood-Brown saw red and, just as he was being led away, smashed a glass bottle on the bar and shoved it into the left side of Mr. Hadabashlu's head.
And how badly was the victim injured?
Mr. Hadabashlu was left with a gash below his left ear, which needed 8 stitches, and a deep wound to his left hand, which required a further 7. The 38-year-old said in a victim impact statement, quote, "My mind goes back to that night a million times a day. I still have a lot of pain in my head. My thumb is 40% numb, and I find it hard to do the basic things with it," unquote.
These defence teams say this was an emotional response to some other things that were going on for Harwood-Brown at that time. What do we know about that?
Harwood-Brown's lawyer revealed that while Picklebacks appeared to be running well, behind the scenes the numbers weren't adding up, and the night this incident occurred, his client was closing down the bar for good and felt terrible about letting down his staff. Against this backdrop, his lawyer argued that the violent outburst was a spontaneous reaction motivated by a desire to protect his partner and urged the judge to consider a suspended sentence.
And how was he eventually sentenced?
But recorder David Blundell, KC, ruled that the attack was simply too serious. The judge handed Harwood-Brown of the Mead Hawking a 3-year custodial sentence. He will spend no more than half of that term behind bars before serving the remainder on licence in the community.
Thanks so much, James. You can read more about this by clicking on the story on the homepage of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Elsewhere today, there have been tributes to the man killed when a motorbike and van collided in Harrietsham. The crash happened on the A20 on October 9th. 53-year-old Darren Holly sustained fatal injuries. He's been remembered as a loving father and cherished grandfather. One person's been arrested following reports of a teenager being sexually assaulted on Tunbridge Wells Common. We told you yesterday how the girl was apparently approached and threatened in a wooded area while she was walking home on Saturday night. Police say a man in his 30s has been detained. A man's died after being hit by a train on a level crossing in Canterbury. Emergency crews were called to St Dunstan's near Canterbury West Railway Station on Saturday. It's believed a man in his 50s was pronounced dead at the scene. It's not being treated as suspicious. The leader of Kent County Council is facing growing pressure to stand down, with 7 local Labour MPs now urging her to quit. In a letter, they've accused Reform UK's Lyndon Kemp-Caron of unprofessional behaviour in a meeting after a video was leaked to the press. 4 councillors were suspended by the party yesterday, including Paul Thomas, who represents Maidstone South. He spoke to us briefly at County Hall.
Yes, I can confirm that I've been suspended from Reform while they carry out an investigation. I am confident that investigation will be carried out very swiftly and I will be exonerated and reinstated within Reform. In the interim period, I will still continue to represent my constituents that voted for me. I will continue to support the leadership at KCC.
It seems not all the councillors who've lost the whip have had such a measured reaction. Here's our local democracy reporter, Simon Finlay.
I spoke to Maxine Fothergill when she arrived at County Hall this morning for a committee meeting that she was removed from because she was no longer a Reform councillor. And she was in tears, saying that she had done nothing wrong and was so upset to be accused of the leak. I'm told that the 4 will be investigated and the matter will go before a disciplinary panel up at Reform UK headquarters in London in due course. But all of this comes on the back of the revelations in the Guardian video and a leaked message from Lyndon Cowan-Curran telling members that that whoever did this was they were cowards and that they were foolish and they will have no political future. I mean, what happens next? I hear that Lyndon Cowan-Curran has no intention of going anywhere and that she has got the support of her cabinet members.
You can follow any updates as they happen on the homepage of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
A Sittingbourne woman who was jailed after stabbing her ex-husband has been found guilty of breaching a restraining order. Olive Ripley was sentenced to 6 years in 2018 for attacking her former partner. She was in court earlier this month after she was found at his home in Faversham. The 69-year-old from Meads Avenue was ordered to do rehab and pay more than £850. An inquest has opened into the death of a man who was found dead in the Channel. The 21-year-old's body was pulled from the water about 2 miles off the coast on April 17th. His cause of death has been recorded as unascertained. A man's been arrested following a police pursuit and collision in Gravesend. A vehicle failed to stop for officers in Rochester on October 11th. It was followed onto the A2 London bound before it collided with another vehicle near to the exit for Shawn Country Park. Two people suffered minor injuries. The 18-year-old suspect has been released on bail. Now, two Kent women who survived domestic abuse are starting a community project to provide clothing and toiletries for other victims. The DV Closet in Sevenoaks is a safe space where women who fled abuse can get the support they need. Charlotte and Jo want to use their experience to help others who are also vulnerable. Charlotte's been speaking to Lucy.
When I went into refuge, at the time I kind of noticed what was kind of missing for women. Even when I look back now from like obviously near 7 years ago, I can quite see and I identified where that gap was. And that's always where this mission has been built from. So obviously going into refuge, you've got the safety, you've got a roof over your head. And then obviously there's the process of being rehomed and obviously going back out into like the community and everything. But I think that what my journey's been probably for the past 7 years is it's been a big healing process for me. I've probably gone on quite a big spiritual healing journey as well, going back and obviously like healing a lot of stuff that was before, so like childhood, lots of things like that, that kind of I kind of like started to puzzle piece together where these relationships and me kind of met and why I kind of was forming these bonds. And then I think once I went through quite a deep process with that, I wanted to start rebuilding things again, because through that I become a emotional health coach and I work obviously with women in coaching all aspects of obviously like women in all different parts, not just domestic violence. But it always brought me back to my story, and I always knew within like the community and the bigger mission for me, which I hope one day through everything, is to have my own women's centre. I met a really interesting lady as well, like very early on when I was in refuge myself. Her name's Rachel and she has her own women's centre in Devon. And she was a huge inspiration to me like 8 years ago. And yeah, I've literally just since then worked on myself in my own life, but always wanting to build towards giving back. And that's really where the mission's come from. The closet itself, being with the clothing and the toiletries, is an idea that we both genuinely sort of come together with, because I remember being in refuge and there was small food banks that you could go along to and they were really helpful. But there just wasn't that kind of gap. And what I mean by that is that what we want to create within the closet is somewhere where women can come to, and there's we can be relatable, because we was them, like we was in their situation like all these years ago. And I think that sometimes someone verbally saying to you like it's going to be okay, things can get better, they are all the things that people are going to say. But I think when you are around women, and I mean I find it now just on a daily basis, like when I do the work within my coaching and that, it's an inspiration for people to see that there is hope, like there is that light at the end of a tunnel. And yeah, I think there's all aspects of what these women can do while they're in refuge, but I think when they're in there, you are so extremely vulnerable and you're at your lowest point. And the closet basically just come from just my own mission of obviously wanting to build something that these women can feel like, oh, I'm not on my own. And like I say, definitely experiencing it from two people who've actually walked that.
Kent Online News.
Two Kent Pizza Hut restaurants will be among 68 closing across the country. A list has been announced and it includes sites at Chatham's Dockside and Thanet Retail Park. Around 1,200 staff are at risk of redundancy after a franchisee went into administration. People living in Whitstable have raised concerns over plans to place traveller pitches alongside a new housing development. The project at Golden Hill would see a minimum of 20 gypsy and traveller sites put on open green space alongside 70 houses. Neighbours say it'll increase sewage pollution and traffic congestion. The plans are part of the local plan, which is currently out for consultation. Plans to turn a former village pub in Sevenoaks into a five-bedroom house has the backing of residents. It's after the Checkers in Farningham High Street shut in July after 25 years of trading. The property is currently listed as an asset of community value on Sevenoaks District Council's register. Plans to build a reservoir near Canterbury have taken a step forward. Southeast Water say the facility on land at Broadoak is needed to secure supplies in the area in the future. When complete, it would be able to hold more than 5 billion litres of water and supply 22 million litres every day. Ben McKellar is the project manager.
At the moment, we're undertaking a first phase of ground investigation where we're trying to understand the ground makeup. We understand it to be very much clay, but we need to know what that clay is doing. We've undertaken a number of trial pits, some boreholes. The trial pits are designed to find what are called shear planes. And those shear planes will tell us how big our dam needs to be able to counteract any potential movement that might happen in the clay layers.
And how will this work inform the next steps? Like, what are you expecting these surveys to show?
So these surveys will inform our outline design initially. So our outline design will give us an idea of the size of the dam and how it will be constructed. Once we understand that and those designs have been developed, we'll be able to be in a position to submit for planning permission. And then from there, we'll look to put out an invitation to tender so that we can get contractors on board to actually do the detailed design and build the reservoir and dam.
Do you have an idea of the kind of the time frame of this one?
Yeah, so we're looking to submit our planning application in around 2028, looking to award contracts in around 2030, at which point we'll start construction, and looking to get water into supply by the mid-2030s.
And kind of what does it take to create an engineer a reservoir? Obviously this is a huge project, not just in size but in kind of scale and the amount of arms this project has.
Yeah, so there's multiple facets to this project. We've got the reservoir, we've got the dams, we've also got the water treatment works, we've got the pipelines that bring the water from the Great Stour about 12 kilometres to the east, and then we've got the drinking water pipeline that puts the water into our network some 7 kilometres to the west, so it is a very large project.
And what will residents expect to see on this site over the coming months, years, maybe decades of this kind of reservoir here?
So in the coming months, the residents will see us pulling off site with regards to the ground investigation, and then there will be a period of time where not a lot will be happening. It's only when we award contract around 2030 that they'll start seeing some construction happening, and that'll be over a period of around 5 years or so.
Kent Online News.
Work to redevelop the site of a former co-op site in Dartford is set to start next year. The £2.5 million project will see the building in Spittle Street turned into housing. 20% will be designated as affordable. It could also include a local cinema, nursery and shared community space. A former care home in Deal could be turned into holiday lets. The 40-bed Grove Villa site in Mill Road closed in 2019 and has been put on the market for more than £1 million. Plans to replace it with 13 properties were approved in June this year. The first service at a new £10 million community health centre in Thanet has opened. The Thanet Community Health Hub in Broadstairs aims to deliver faster access and reduces how far patients have to travel for treatment. A respiratory clinic is now up and running. The facility will also have cardiology, blood testing and MRI facilities. Teams of volunteers have started picking apples at a Kent farm after the owner decided to donate its orchards proceeds to charity. Crops produced by the trees at Hazel Street Farm in Horsmonden are no longer financially viable. The fruit will instead benefit the Felix Project, which will make sure it gets to families who need it over the winter. Will Davenport runs the farm. He's been chatting to Lucy.
We used to rent the apple orchards out to another farmer, but as the trees are getting older, it's become less and less viable. And this year they pulled out. And so we contacted the Felix Project because we're not experts in marketing apples or selling apples or anything. And also we haven't got the labour force to be able to pick them. And the quality of the apples is not up to the level that that we would expect because we haven't been looking after them over the summer that much. So the Felix Project have been brilliant and taking what they can, picking as much as they can, and at least the crop gets used, which would be a shame. Otherwise, it would all fall on the floor and just rot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's more and more of these projects now, isn't there? And I know Felix Projects have teamed up with Fair Share, which is obviously a really big charity that sort of makes sure food doesn't go to waste. I mean, is that a problem on farms of kind of things that maybe fruit that kind of goes to waste if it's not picked in time or for other reasons?
Well, I mean, there's a window for picking apples. Obviously, you can't just leave them forever. And it coincides with the same time period for picking grapes, which is a bit of a problem for us because we're so busy picking grapes, we haven't got the resources to be able to pick apples as well at the same time. We need an enormous number of people. So for us, we can't do it. It's the way, I don't know, it's the way the businesses have moved on, I think. And I don't know, apple farming for us is a historical business, I suppose, that we're slowly moving away from. And I want to keep the orchards there. I don't want to pull all the orchards up and then have huge amounts of land to farm something else with. We don't really want to expand the vineyard much more. We've already got lots of vines, making lots of wine. So we want to keep the trees, and Felix have come in and sort of supplied us with a solution of something to do with the crop, which is it's very gratifying in a way that it's being used for people who might struggle to afford to buy food and things like that, which is great.
And so from your experience, I mean, talking to other farmers and people who own land in Kent, do you think more businesses are moving away from farming apples, particularly in Kent, where vineyards are becoming so much more popular?
I think the big apple farmers are carrying on and doing well. It's the smaller farms that are struggling, I think. And what I've seen a little bit of is that apple trees normally grow on a sort of 25-year cycle or something like that. So you, every 25 years, you pull the trees up and replant them. And I'm seeing some orchards being pulled up and not replanted, because the cost of replanting and the price of apples and everything just doesn't, the figures don't add up. And, you know, labour is one of the biggest inputs in any farming business, really. And fruit farming is very labour intensive. And now we've got the minimum wage going up, national insurance going up and everything. Labour is becoming more expensive and the price of apples is not really moving. And that makes it more difficult to make any money out of it. And people are carrying on with the orchards that they have, but I think when they reach the end of their life, they probably won't be replaced.
Kent Online News.
A purpose-built nursery has opened in Chatham after decades of children being taught in a rundown mobile classroom. The new facility at Luton Primary School will be able to accommodate up to 64 pupils and increases provision for local families. The school is also one of the most diverse in the country, with 58 languages being spoken. And a family-owned butcher in Kent has picked up 3 national awards. Herne Bay's Taylor Meats took home a silver and 2 gold medals at the National Craft Butchers Product Awards. Their crowning achievement was the gold for their black garlic dry-cured streaky bacon. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups and exclusive stories. You can choose the subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to www.kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.